I want to say good morning to everybody. Put my little hands up to you. I hope that you've all been well. One other thing, in addition to the every time I hear my bio, I'm like, oh yeah, I was there. I've been a lot, a few places, but I'm also in Los Angeles now, and I've been aligned with Inside LA the past, I'd say, 4 years or so, and there's just ongoing changes happening, and I'm just grateful to be here on the planet with you all. I hope that you and your loved ones have been safe and relatively safe and sane during these very divisive and chaotic times that we are all witnessing. And I'm also, am I coming through okay volume wise? Yeah. So I'm also, cognizant of the fact that there is just a lot of suffering across the spectrum that many, many people are facing and experiencing. And so I want to just invite you just to be as comfortable and as relaxed as you can be during this time of co-creating community. And I do emphasize co-create because I don't have a bag of tricks that's going to suit everybody's kind of needs, or I don't even know what the needs are, but because of my orientation to really being faithful and true to listening to my heart, that tends to be the way that I can become a little bit more intelligent and understanding about what is happening, what might be the direction to take in a space such as this. And I invite you to listen to your heart and to practice your heart practice in that way too, so that you can just, we can all be on the same plane and the same page. I don't have a lot of introductions, but I do want to mention that it was really beautiful the last time I was here with you, and I see some familiar spaces and things of that nature. So I feel that for the for our practice period, I would like to just introduce something that is very open and what may be easy, but I would just like you for a moment just to become aware of where energy is most prominent in your body at this time. And you don't even need to change your posture. You can adjust that later on, but just become aware of where energy is most prominent in the body. You may start in the center or the heart of the upper body and allow yourself to trail out to the extremities of the shoulders or downward towards the hips or the back. In the Radiant Sutras, Shakti said, what are these undulating energies within these bodies that move us into action? So there's a very active principle. If you want to look for energy in the body, look for what is alive. Observe the signs of life as they are revealing themselves. In your own temple, And where you see signs of life, it will also be accompanied by the law of life, which is impermanence. We are observing life in the body. And we are observing the law of life, which is impermanence. And one of the principles of life is that there is a rhythm. That undergirds all of life. Can you see any traces of rhythmic pattern in your flow of respiration, in the flow of the vibrations that your body is generating? I invite you to come into attunement with that. In a very natural and casual way. Breath comes in and the breath flows out. And that is one cycle of the rhythmic pattern. From this place of stillness, you may be able to now objectively view the dynamic of mind and to see that the contents that are being generated there are not of your own doing. If you can just observe the arising of a thought, the full manifestation of that thought or idea, and also its passing away, how it diminishes. And to see it from the vantage point of awareness itself. We can be so familiar with the content of thought and yet still not have to necessarily own it or fully identify with it. From the vantage point of awareness, I'm in an invite, a direction to descend from the realm of mind and even the realm of upper body and come into the area of the abdomen. And let's see if we can just invite some full flows of oxygen. Come into the belly area. And to observe an expansion of the belly with each cycle of respiration. And observe how that impacts the other hemispheres of the body, the lower hemisphere and the upper hemisphere. Do this to your own, within the range of your own comfort. We may find that we can relieve some tension there in the abdomen that we weren't aware of. And observe how it affects the rest of the system. The energy that it may awaken and stimulate. I want to extend the permission for you to make this practice what you need it to be. And see if you can follow the directions of your heart and your mind and your body in sustaining a wholesome disposition. A wholesome posture. An energizing alignment or realignment. It is in these solemn moments that we may find that we're able to establish trust with ourselves because we can hear. We learn to listen. We become more confident with following the dictates of our own heart. That's what characterizes this particular time. That's why it's difficult at times. Feel your resonance, people. Observing the signs of life, the streams of energy that flow throughout your entire network. Some are more subtle, some are very obvious. But maybe they just serve to tell us that energy is present and that there's still time and that there's still an opportunity. To still make our most authentic and true contribution and expression in this life. You're so inclined, I'm going to invite you to physically make contact with yourself with the palm of your hand or fingertip if you want to. But I invite you to just try it out and just to see what is the energetic response in your own contact. A hand on top of a hand or on top of the knee, on the heart, the belly. And just see how your body responds to that. There's no words needed. Energy has its own language, and it's a language of the unknown, but it feels so familiar. And I will offer a short visitation to the phrases of metta in the affirmative. I have been safe from inner harm and outer harm. I've experienced some joy and some ease at times. I wish for my loved ones and my family to continue to experience safety and ease and good health, and extending beyond my own family, may all beings experience safety and ease. And well-being. And if those are absent, may the community that is in their proximity be en route to them to do their best to secure their sense of safety and ease and well-being. May the routes and roads be clear to meet those people where they are, and may the resources come in abundance to do so. I invite you to take a deep breath with me on the count of three. Uno, dos, tres. Inhale. And release. You may slowly awaken the extremities of your bodies, meaning your toes or fingers, smaller parts of the body. And just awaken like the giant that you are, coming out of a respite, a brief slumber. I want to thank you for your practice, everyone. And I would like to invite just a brief 5-minute interlude, and we will return at 9:45. I would like to welcome everyone back. It's Sunday morning. I'm in Los Angeles. There's a little rain happening outside, some drizzles. And it's all good. We get weather reports, right? I have a, first of all, I wanted to thank you for your practice, for finding the space and the time to connect with yourself, to see what was, or to be able to discern what was, what was so prominent. And then we have the gift of the law of impermanence, which gives us a platform to observe what was. And it creates some space for us to kind of reclaim ourselves and say, hey, I'm already in the next moment now. So let me see if I can be in this moment and not with the previous situation. So these are just different ways that I utilize to, different lenses that I utilize to kind of reconcile what's happening with me in practice and in my life, period. And thankfully, these practices of mindfulness and meditation have given me, over time, they've given me a sense of confidence that whatever arises isn't always necessarily the end of me. So, it helps. I have a little bit of a dilemma, and it's because of the mind and the choices that I need to make in the next few seconds on the direction that I would like to take in terms of offering some food for thought. A few days ago, I had it all kind of like worked out, like, you know, what was the most resonant point that I wanted to address in my practice, and in terms of formulating some food for thought, points of reflection and contemplation. And then yesterday, I had a whole new train of thoughts come in, and they were really resonating and grounding. And I was like, what do I do? I've got two different things, which is a good problem to have. And at the same time, it's like, when I get here tomorrow, I'll figure it out. And I haven't figured it out yet. However, I'm just going to have to take a risk and go in the direction that I'll just have to find out with you. And I hope that you'll hold space with me as we incline and indulge in some things here. The framework that I would like to speak to has to do with the four foundations of mindfulness. By a show of physical hands, is anybody here not familiar with the four foundations of mindfulness? So, real quick, the four foundations of mindfulness are mindfulness of the breath and body, which makes one. Then there's mindfulness of feeling tones, the internal world, emotions, energies, if you will. And we were observing energies a lot during our meditation practice. So there's breath and body, which comprise one. There's feeling tones, which is the second foundation. The third foundation of mindfulness is mindfulness of mind itself and the objects which it produces, such as thoughts, memories, imagination, creative flows, and whatnot. And the final foundation, which is the fourth one, is the combination of the three previous ones: mindfulness of breath, body, feeling tones, thoughts. And the fourth is called all arising phenomena. So it's a gradual pace of awareness to where we ultimately can be mindfully aware and to observe all of our own componentry with loving awareness and the external world with loving awareness. So that is going to be kind of like the framework that I'm going to have us kind of exercise with today. So I'll begin with this. Has anybody, can you recollect a time When you felt a deep degree of despair, despair, and I would say hopelessness are somewhat synonymous. And to those of you who said yes to recollecting that experience of despair, how did you get out of it? Despair looks like the end, but you're here. I just want you to reflect on how did I get through that? Was it a passage of time? Was it some sort of rescue? Did someone pull me out of my dark hole? Or did I have to climb myself out of a dark hole or dig myself out? How did you make it through that period of despair? Really? I'm going to introduce a thought experiment. Now, I just want you to just be open to it. It happens in the realm of dream or fantasy, but it's going to speak to this experience of despair. In all disclosure, this thought experiment is something that was revealed to me by a great philosopher by the name of Friedrich Nietzsche. And he entitled this thought experiment, The Eternal Recurrence of the Same. And it happened like this. The 19th century, Friedrich had went to Switzerland to kind of get into a new environment so he can continue his writing and his work. And he had body ailments and relationship issues, and the dots just weren't connecting. And so a friend of his advised him, why don't you go to Switzerland? And there's some nice lodging in the town. And the town he was in, I can't remember the name of the town, but he had access to a great lake there called Lake Lucerne. And he would spend a lot of time there walking along the shoreline of that lake, and, just working out ideas and solving problems and coming up with new inventions for his poetry and his writing. And one day he was out walking along the shoreline of Lake Lucerne. And there was this huge boulder on the shoreline. And as he was approaching this boulder, off to his right, he became arrested by a thought. And it was a very visceral thought. And the imagery of the thought was a play of three individuals. The first individual was a demon, a non-benevolent divine being. And I ascribe divine to the demon because they are celestial in nature. If you want to utilize the term Mara, that's perfectly fine. We won't split hairs over that. But there was a demon. And there were two individuals. And the demon came up to the first individual and made a proposition. And the proposition was this: if you had to live your same life as you have known it over and over and over again, what would you do? Your same life that you know it, as you have experienced, what would you do? And the response of the first individual that heard that proposal, their knees buckled. They yelled and they screamed and they gnashed their teeth as they crumpled down to the ground into a pile of tears and moans and shouts and screams. It was agonizing, the idea of living my same life over and over again. It caused them to have a literal meltdown. And the demon went to the second individual and made the same proposition, but we won't get to them yet. As mindfulness and meditation practitioners, I want to just examine, I invite you to examine with me, what was the cause of this demise of the first person? The one that had the meltdown upon just the idea of living their same life over and over again, just as they have lived it. So, if we look at the mindfulness of the body principle, the first foundation, the information comes in through something that we call the ear gate, the sense door, if you will, called the ear. And that intangible vibration, that information comes in and it goes somewhere. And that's all that the story tells us is that the demon whispered in this person's ear something that caused them to melt down. He didn't, they weren't pushed or kicked or shoved. They just imploded. So I want to ask you, what causes that? What is the chain reaction within us that upon hearing something, what is the chain reaction that causes us to just break down physically, emotionally? And I would invite you to unmute yourself. I would just like to get like maybe three or four responses. So how does, what is the triggering principle? Is it a physical one or is it a mental one? Or is it both? I want to propose to you that the way I have examined this, I'm seeing that within the mindfulness of mind dimension, there are objects of mind. We have thoughts that we work with in our mindfulness mindfulness practice, observing thoughts, observing our mind being in the future, in tomorrow, envisioning, planning. And then we have little things that have happened, you know, things people said to us and whatnot, you know, just all types of noise. But the specific component or object of thought that I'm looking at is that which is called memory. And this individual, part of their what comprised their meltdown was that the memory of their life came rushing in like a tsunami. And their past literally became their future. Coupled with the proposition that I have to live that all over again. So that's pretty heavy. And it's very human to not be able to distinguish between the two. But you literally, I believe that this individual literally couldn't distinguish the present from the past, and the past became that person's future in context of that proposition. However, this is still within within the context of our discussion. This is still within the jurisdiction of mindfulness of mind. And to those of you who are practicing mindfulness meditation and who've been undergoing the trainings of mindfulness of the body, mindfulness of the breath, mindfulness of feeling tones, mindfulness of mind, you've already begun the process of being able to discern and distinguish what is real. Let's move on to the second person. So this demon, having one win under their belt, with the first one melting down, they come to the second person. Same proposition. What would you do if you had to live your same life over and over again? And the second person responded differently. The second person, upon hearing that, their eyes lit up. And they turned to that demon and looked them right in the face. And they said, "Thank you, you divine being, for imbuing me with wisdom and knowledge. Thank you for your divine utterances." And they didn't melt down. They saw something in that proposition that the first person wasn't able to connect to. What they saw in that proposition of living their life over and over again was an opportunity to transform despair. And we have already established that a number of you can recall and recollect your previous bout with despair and hopelessness. And what this second individual was able to see was, you know what? If I don't make all the money in the world, if I don't have the happiest family, if I don't have the best partner, if I don't make it to the top of whatever, what I can do is make the effort in my next lifetime to transform my experience with despair and hopelessness. I'm going to work with that. And how do you work with that? We have to go back to the first individual. Because you have two distinct beings who got the same message. And if it's true that the first individual, part of their demise was that they weren't able to manage the dynamics of mind, then it may very well be that this second person will begin their process of transforming despair by getting a better handle of mind. And guess what, people? You are already doing it. If you have undergone or been introduced to mindfulness and meditation, particularly through the componentry of awareness of the breath and body, awareness of feeling tones, and mindfulness of mind and the objects of mind that arise and pass away, you already have been exposed to a small part of the tools and resources that you will need to transform despair already. I hope that you are feeling what I'm saying. And maybe we can begin to see that meditation and the principles of mindfulness can offer us more than medication for our emotions or ways that we can manage our emotions. I call it an EMS, an emotional management system, where we're just trying to be okay, which is fine. But there's more. Can you envision yourself encountering, you're seeing despair like come down the road and there's no escape for you, there's no exit ramp, and despair is just coming down, and you have the wherewithal to meet it? And to potentially transform that? I think in our current day and time, despair is rampant. Within our own selves and the wider community that we are witnessing. But I am persuaded that if this thought experiment is true, I'm persuaded that we have already, including myself, we have already been given a good part of the resource. We have a clue on how to live in such a way that requires our engagement and our determination and a certain level of ferocity to really live in a way that we can allow ourselves to be transformative. So for the second person, that was the full extent of their response. We know nothing else about how they proceeded. But that's what made, that was the distinguishing factor between the two. One was able to see that what they could do was learn how to transform despair. And the other one couldn't see anything but their past and all it contained. And it was overwhelming. And that was the end of the thought experiment at Lake Lucerne with Friedrich Nietzsche. I want to thank you for your time and attention and for your consideration of these things. I'm not saying that you need to accept it as truth, but I do invite you to see for yourself and to take your own inventory on what you've been doing and what do you have at your availability? What's available to you? Do you have to meet despair the same way you did last time? I mean, can we just live? Know what I mean? It's not gonna be easy. This isn't a way out, it's a way in. Anyway, all I have is rants and tangents from here, so I will pause my speaking and allow for the community's voice to be heard with your questions and reflections.